Okay. Yeah, bobbins are so you know how I do cross stitch, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the thread that you're using for cross stitch is called floss. And it
Yes.
comes where it's already pre-wound and six like with six strands together, right? So when you're prepping your floss to use it, like when you're kitting stuff up, some people will put it away as one big piece with all six strands still mixed in.
Yes.
I don't like to do that. I prefer having it as the individual strands. That way, when I'm pulling a strand, I've just got what I'm using. I don't need to like try and not have the rest of it get knotted up and become a big mess. So instead of doing it in the moment, I tend to do a lot of extra prep work. So a bobbin is the thing that people will spin their floss around to be able to keep it from tying, like knotting up when it's in storage.
Yeah.
So most people, when they're doing that, like I said, they'll t leave their six strands all together and they'll just wrap that around the bobbin. And for me, because I don't like doing that, I end up having like each length of floss getting separated into six individual strands and then spinning each of those around the bobbin. When you buy a skein of floss in the store, it tends to come at about 8 yards. And when I'm stitching, I tend to work with it in 1 yard length. So I have 8 times 6 like individual pieces I'm spinning for each color, and I've got a bunch of stuff that I bought a while ago to kit up for a big project that I'm just now getting around to spinning.
Okay.
So it's just a lot of it's fiddly. It's not that it's hard or annoying. It's just it has to be done and it's fiddly. And so I tend to do it by putting TV on and then just zoning out with it for hours at end.
I haven't been painting little dudes while we've been watching TV lately. I've
I
been
haven't
doing a lot
been.
of real, like, watching TV while taking notes and really scrutinizing what I'm watching.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what happens when you're running multiple podcasts with conversations around the things that you are consuming.
Are we looking at court martial? Is that where we're at? The timeline has agreed with itself.
I believe so. I think everything is now fully caught up across the board for
Oh,
all.
all right. And
I don't remember if that was the name of the episode, but it was. I think we're caught up.
that's where we watched Tomorrow Is Yesterday. Although I barely remember it.
Yeah,
Oh,
no, that
it's the
was a
one
while
where
ago.
they have to like, oh, it's the one where they like,
Yeah, they go back in time. Yeah,
yeah, there
we
are
both
jet
really liked the
planes
episode.
and
Yeah.
some weird stuff happens. They want to erase the guy's memory because of the Prime Directive.
Without calling it the Prime
They
Directive.
don't, right? Yeah. What's the other thing they call the Prime Directive sometimes?
I don't know. The Prime Directive is the only one that comes to mind for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't place it. I don't know what you're thinking of.
There is a. Yeah, it doesn't matter. There's another phrase that's used. Sometime. Pretty sure I was thinking about the non-interference clause.
That's fair. When it comes up, you'll have to point it out because, like, clearly, I've missed something here.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. But
Fair.
yeah, all right. So yeah. So now Captain Kirk's career is at stake when he's put on trial for the loss of a crewman. I mean, he loses crewmen willy-nilly. This guy
Yeah, but this one's
loses
actually
crewmen
negligence.
like.
This time it's actual negligence. He didn't just lose a crewman. He negligently loses the crewman this time.
It's not a salt vampire or a bottomless pit this time.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, do you have the numbers in front of you?
I do. So it's episode 20 of the initial run. As you said, it was named Court Martial. We've got Mark Daniels as our director, who I feel like, yeah, Mark Daniels we've seen before. He did The Man Trap and Naked Time
At All
and The
Star.
Menagerie parts 1 and 2.
Whoa.
So this is a person we've had some pretty good episodes out of so far.
All right. Wow.
It's written by Don M. I'm going to say it wrong with my apologies. Mankiewicz. Mankiewicz.
I think you did a pretty good job.
And there's a teleplay with Don and Stephen W. Karabatsos, which I'm probably also saying very wrong.
Now that
So yeah,
sounds, I
this.
mean, that sounds, I feel like, sounds like you did an okay job with both of those, I think.
Oh, thank you. At a quick glance, I don't think we've got anything from either of these writers before.
Okay.
This came out February 2nd of 1967. On sorry, the original air date was February 2nd, 1967, and IMDb gives it a 7.4 out of 10.
7.4, huh? Okay.
Yeah, it
That's
looks like
pretty
it's in the
good.
same medium middle as a lot of the episodes we've watched so far, but I think that's a lower rating than Mark Daniels usually gets. Oh no, Mantrap is only 7.2. So yeah, it's about where he, it's about where everything else has been kind of like a as generically decent episode. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in the sevens. Yeah, in the sevens is pretty good. Yeah, I don't remember this at all.
No, I don't either. I was talking about it with Chaos earlier, and he was talking about possibly, joining to watch, and then he realized he's too tired, so he's gone and laid down.
Okay.
But yeah, when I mentioned it earlier, I was like, no, I don't remember it, and I don't think he does either, just based off of how he was responding. So
Yeah, I got based on that little line of description, I have no idea.
yeah, no, this is definitely going to be another one of these. We need to watch it before I know if I remember it,
All right, well, let's watch it then. Let's take a look.
Let's do it.
Okay. Hello, welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to The Least Ready Room, a podcast about Star Trek, where myself and my friend Chris have committed to watching every episode possible of Star Trek, which is going to be quite a task, especially if they continue to make more while we're still watching the ones that came out in the 60s. Today we're going to be talking about Court Martial, and we're also going to be talking to Weebs today about the episode Court Martial. Let's just get right into it.
Good shit.
Yeah, I don't know. It's what'd you think of, it's a good episode. What'd you think about wacky old Court Martial at the end?
Is that his, is that the dude dressed in brown?
Oh no, I thought Court Martial was the crazy guy in the
Oh.
engine room with the phaser that looks like he's William Defoe's father.
Yeah.
His father William.
Little too old to
Be Kirk's
be
rival.
a captain, I think. Not projecting a youthful
No.
type of energy.
Certainly a gnarled looking man. He's been through the ringer. He's been turned over for promotion because Kirk has tormented his whole long career. Court.
So
Yeah, Kirk's old rival, Court. First name Court, last name Marshall. Do you, you remember Morpheus?
sure.
He had that big rave that time in
I
a cave. Do you remember Andy Dick was there?
No.
You don't recall that?
No.
And Andy Dick is telling, like, Neo that there's gonna be an orgy in Morpheus's private quarters after the giant cave rave. And Morpheus stands up and he's addressing the people and stuff, and I don't remember what he's saying, but Andy Dick is like, Morpheus, what can we expect at this orgy? And Morpheus says, machines. Does that ring a
Yeah,
bell at all?
it's like some MTV
Yes. Okay, good.
remix type shit.
I'm glad you remember it.
Yeah.
Machines.
There's something, yeah. That's another thing that I'm not even entirely sure why it tickled me so much, just like Kirk's right-hand control panel where he's got yellow alert, red alert, and jettison pod. He's got three dedicated buttons to go to various alerts, which are the excuses he needs. That's the process he needs to kill the guy in the pod. So you want all those controls right there so you can cycle quickly through your alerts.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, real quick.
The premise of this, basically, the whole problem is they're saying he killed the guy before going to red alert, which makes it seem like if you go to red alert, jettison the pods as much as you want. Once you go to red alert, you can shoot some guys off.
Yeah, free game. Kill them all.
Is somebody scratching Paprika? Is there a scratching going on? The other day, I was sitting here playing Death Stranding. You've played Death Stranding, right?
Sure.
And it can be kind of scary, the parts where you have to sneak past the ghosts, especially when you've only done it a few times and you don't have any weapons yet in the game. And I heard like a noise like somewhere in the house, and I thought, well, it's probably the cat scratching at the cat thing. And then like and so I kept creeping, and I got headphones on, so I'm like encapsulated in my own little world. And so I went creeping along. And like right as one of the ghosts like grabbed me, like the person, it was a person, knocked on the door like, very firmly, because they had inferred that I hadn't heard the first time, scared the shit out of me. And yeah, I went over there, and the way it was right in at twilight, and the setting sun was kind of across from that little front window of the house. So I looked out the window and I just saw this shape standing there, and I was like so fucking unsettled. All right, zoom in it. But he scared the shit out of me.
Yep, he'd scare me too. That sucks. I often have unsettling feelings like that when I put on headphones.
Yeah. What am I not hearing? Like when the guy in the brown, I don't know. I didn't make a note of what his name was on this playthrough. But Kirk's lawyer, when he's giving that, he gives a great speech about machines and how fuck machines and we cannot elevate the machines above.
Right.
So I was thinking a lot about Morpheus talking about fucking machines. But I also like, I think that might be the best scene. Although there's some fun stuff. The reveal, oh yeah, there's the heartbeats, which is, yeah, I guess they don't have the technology yet to
Yeah,
scan for life
weird.
forms.
Weird, but okay.
Yeah, it's fine with me. There's a lot of weird stuff. Yeah, you weren't, were you here? Was it last week that we? No, the week before we watched Tomorrow Is Yesterday with like the jet fighter pilot. Were you there for that one?
Was I?
It's like it's a
Maybe.
jet fighter pilot from like 1965 that they encounter.
No.
But the yeah anyway yeah but the end of that one, like, it's some Star Trek mumbo jumbo that doesn't make any kind of sense, kind of. Well, I mean, I guess the microphone thing does make sense. It's just, it almost feels like someone thinking, like, what kind of weird future way can I figure out for them to find a guy hiding on the ship? It could be that no one had really considered the fact that we could probably scan it for life forms. Maybe they can't. I mean, I don't know. Maybe scanning for life forms became technology that they acquired before TNG. Anyway, the heartbeat thing is
Andrews
funny.
hadn't heard of it yet.
Yeah, exactly. I like how, yeah, so part of the plot line is that the computer records show that Kirk had murdered the guy before Red Alert occurred, and that's against the rules. Always go to Red Alert before you jettison the dude.
Yeah.
And
Order of operations, bro.
so the ship's computer, yeah, the reason the guy in brown is mad about the machines is because the ship computer says that Kirk did the things in the incorrect order. And right. The way that Spock figures out that the computer must have been fucked with is that he can now beat the computer at chess, but he couldn't before. Maybe that means that Mr. Marshall had to reinstall the Enterprise's operating system, and therefore Spock's tweaking to the chess program was undone, and now Spock can beat before. And I'm not sure how much sense it makes that because Spock programmed the chess program, he can never beat it. He should always right. draw against it.
Yep.
Okay, I guess. I'm not.
Yeah, it's a little loose, but Vulcans have abilities and intuitions that are above ours.
That's all right. That's fair. That's fair enough. Did you notice that, again, there's a couple episodes this season, and this is one of them where he refers to himself as a Vulcanian?
Yeah.
He's from Vulcania. Yeah. Maybe this episode was running a little short, and that's why they decided that when the guys walk up and put their hands on the Space Bible, each of them, we have to have... Was it Roddenberry's wife reading their rank and... title no. and name? No, it wasn't. It was just some other computer. Yeah.
The voice? Yeah, I'm not sure.
It might have been, Michelle Barrett Roddenberry? Roddenberry Barrett? Michelle Barrett. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I feel like before watching it just now, I was, and especially during the first part, which is very dry and really doesn't make sense because it's like, here we have you on video committing a crime that really doesn't sound like it makes a lot of sense. And I was sort of, I'm getting bored in the first half. But now that we've just watched it, I think that the second half is kind of fun. And there's a couple silly things and the heartbeats are kind of fun. Yeah. Yeah, what'd you think of it?
It's itself back together.
Yeah, I think so. I especially like Willem Dafoe jumping out like a goblin.
Oh boy, I wish
that it was Willem.
Yeah, that dude rules.
That guy is in like every goddamn movie these days.
Good for him.
Yeah, I don't suppose you've seen Poor Things.
No.
If you pay for Hulu, it might be there.
What's your face just getting railed the entire time?
I would say it is a tiny bit more than what's her face getting railed the entire time. And some of the things that it is beyond that is extremely beautifully well photographed. Like, even if there was no audio to this movie, like, it would be a great thing to have on a screen in your house. But the other thing beyond getting railed is a bunch of really creepy Victorian monster-making kind of Frankenstein shit, which is really creepy and cool. And, there's a lot of
adding it to the list.
I like strongly recommend it. I don't know how I feel about that director. He made a movie called The Lobster, which I don't recommend.
It was a 5.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. It's definitely not a rollicking good time. It's not the kind of movie I recommend to people. But Poor Things is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like...
What'd you say yesterday, something about the art life?
That's the title of the doc. It's a documentary. David Lynch, The Art Life. Yeah, I woo. That's, I mean, yeah, that's not, it's just neat. It's just a bunch of neat little stories and, David Lynch painting and talking about painting.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I,
just wasn't sure I heard correctly.
yeah, definitely the art life, very cool. I feel like, yeah, this is not my favorite one, but I feel like I would give it a six.
Yeah, I'm about there.
It's got like, it's, there's an upswing. It's got like a, it's, it's got some stuff going for it. It does the sort of, I almost feel like, well, it does a lot of things that remind me of other Star Trek court episodes, but the way that his ex-lover comes in talking about how she's a lawyer, and he's like, "Oh, great, do you want to represent me?" And she's like, "No, I'll be busy." And instantly, I mean, I knew instantly she's busy. She's gonna be persecuting him,
Yeah, I'll
prosecuting
be
him.
busy fucking yup.
Yeah. But she gets fucked up instead. But I feel like that's almost, maybe not that exact type of thing happens in another like TNG court episode or Star Trek court, but I feel like that sort of switcheroo happens a lot. There's, it's almost, it
Sure.
almost reminds me of forcing Riker to prosecute against Data.
Yeah.
Who was that asshole? Kim
That
Pine
was
fucking
the
killed him.
wasn't that Mr. Daystrom?
Yeah, it, well, it wasn't Mr. He was from the Daystrom. It wasn't Mr. Daystrom, was it?
No.
Allison Pill murders him in Picard. Guy who wants to steal Data. Oh no, it's gonna be Vajo. Wants to take Data. Actually, I'm just gonna search Measure of the Man. Measure of a Man. Bruce Mathers? Bruce. I'm trying to guess it before I actually
Magic?
search. Bruce Maddox? That might be it.
Yeah.
Bruce Maddox, Measure of a Man, 2018. No. When the USS Enterprise arrives at a newly established starbase, Data is ordered to serve Captain Bruce Maddox. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, what the hell happens? I honestly, Picard season two has fallen into an area of my memory that is also occupied by Revenge of the Sith. I just like, I do not know what happens in Revenge of the Sith. I've watched it 15 times. I like it aggressively pushes my attention away from it. And that's, and like Picard season two, I just can't. It's like every, I don't know. Every episode of that is like trying to touch upon every other episode of that season. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's so, it's like someone, the writers are trying so hard to tie everything together, particularly in season two of Picard, that
Yeah,
it's just pulled together so
I don't
tight
know.
that it doesn't work.
It's weird. It's clearly written for people who aren't normally the demographic. And they're trying to reach
Right,
an
right.
even wider audience.
Yeah.
So capture all the Trekkies, because that's a fucking given.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're it's like palatable daytime TV for moms.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. It is kind of soap opera-y, opera-y, with
Fucking
the
what's
kind
her
of,
face in a red dress singing
yeah, that's the
and
girl that
the
killed Bruce
romance
Maddox.
between the Han Solo type and the cute doctor on
Yes.
Earth.
Yeah. And yeah, they're some type of illegal medical clinic that is keeps getting
Right.
raided by ICE.
Relatable.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Social commentary.
Very 2020 social commentary. Yeah. So much. Yeah, it really, it is like it was, it's like maybe it just was for someone else. I don't know if it ended up being for anyone. There was something I didn't understand about why Guinan was young. Oh, yeah. I guess just because when she's hanging out with Mark Twain, she's Whoopi Goldberg. But then she's young in, like, 2020.
So she can shapeshift?
Yeah, and I guess it probably had to do with Whoopi Goldberg not wanting to be in too many scenes. It honestly was probably that.
Sure.
Yeah, it really is. But it's, and almost all of those things we just mentioned, it's almost just like there's too much going on to really care, because it keeps, it shuttles back. And all those plot lines are almost separate from each other, right? Like, we check in with Han Solo and he's doing his thing, and then he's not even communicating with, at least it felt that way. It really felt like all those things are so disparate.
Yeah, Seven and what's-her-face?
Giraffe.
They have to find Han Solo, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, at some point they do, yeah. Yeah. Han Solo, so, the captain, you know, Captain Han Solo. Stars
in San Francisco.
Weird. Fine. It was fine. I thought season three was great, so.
Yeah, sure.
I like Changelings. Oh, yeah. And that woman, the Changeling woman who is, like, the antagonist for the first, like, you know, maybe two-thirds of the season three?
I'm not sure.
Oh, well, it's Honey Bunny from Pulp Fiction. It's the lady that goes,
oh,
any of you pricks move, and I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you.
No shit.
Yeah, she's actually the daughter of an actor from Star Trek VI. Whoever the main Klingon villain in Star Trek VI is, she's his daughter.
Hmm.
I think her name is something Palmer. But that actually is starting to sound wrong. Star Trek VI. How do I see IMDb? Wikipedia? William Shatner, DeForest Kelly, Leonard Nimoy. Michael Dorn. Christopher Plummer. Amanda Plummer. Christopher Plummer is like the father figure in Knives Out. He's an old actor that was in a ton of things.
Michael. Oh, sure.
Michael Dorn was in Star Trek VI. That's so funny. Oh my god. Red Foreman was also in Star Trek VI. Wow. I haven't seen that one in a while. We'll get there. We're going to watch the movies. But, I still kind of, you know, even though we're going to watch those original series movies, which I really like, and I'm really excited to watch them once we watch the show, I still sneak them on. I still watch them from time to time. Mostly two, three, and four.
The original series movies are definitely the ones I've seen the least.
Oh, yeah. Man, especially those three, two, three, and four. I watched them as a child over and over again. I think they're all really good. One, two, three, four, five, six. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I think all six of those are good. I'm not sure about the TNG ones, but I think the original series movies are, like, really good. And it could be because I watched them when I was, like, you know, nine. That really could be.
Four is the one with the whales, right?
It sure is. And it's... Sure.
So, yeah, I've seen that one, like, three or four times.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. And that's...
Like a zero or one.
Wow. Wrath of Khan is, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's considered to be a pretty good Star Trek movie.
So I've heard.
We'll get there. We'll watch them. Did you tell me, did you give me a number that you think for court-martial?
Yeah, I said I was about six.
You did? Okay. Okay, cool. Cool. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, that was nice. That was okay. Yeah. I'm all right with court martial.
Okay. Tired still. But, I mean, that's going to be an all-day thing, right?
Yeah. probably. Depending on what kind of stimulants.
Oh, we did not make a pot of coffee. Sean went ahead and made himself an Insta coffee before checking with me. So he has had Insta coffee, and I'm not making a pot because he'll just drink it. And I can't drink Insta coffee. It bugs me too much. So no coffee and no energy drinks. I'm going to be trying to not fall asleep while drinking tea, which is not caffeinated nearly enough.
I guess I do have tea as an option, but I'm being highly tempted to make a pot of coffee today.
Oh, I want coffee so bad. And I could go get some. I just don't feel like going out to buy a cup of coffee. Like,
right.
The nearest Tim's, which is our really the best coffee shop in the area for me. We've got a Starbucks, but I'm semi-boycotting Starbucks, and they're way too expensive, and we don't really have a lot of mom-and-pop shops in our area.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so the nearest Tim's is definitely walking distance, but it's also an incredibly sketchy plaza in an already not great area.
I wonder if I have a mom and pop coffee shop, not to interrupt you.
Oh, no, that's fine. Like, I mean, we have other brands, too. We've got, like, Country Style and stuff like that, but, like, none of those are near us. Like, literally, it's Tim Hortons or Starbucks in my area.
Sure, yep. Yeah, that's, yeah. And I feel like for me, it's Starbucks or Dunkin', but maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah, Starbucks. Like I said, Starbucks is like $4 a coffee, whereas I can get and it's like a medium type coffee, right? But like I can go to Tim Hortons and get an extra large for $2.50.
Sure. Right. Yep.
And like an extra large at our Tim Hortons is some, I think it's something like 30 ounces now. It's huge. So I'm just actually looking it up now that I've said it. You know.
Sure.
At Tim Hortons. 24 ounces, sorry. Which is bigger. Venti, the large at Starbucks, is only 20 ounces.
Sure. Yeah.
So I can get like a grande from Starbucks for about $4, I think it is. It's something stupidly overpriced. Or I can get 24 ounces for like $2. And yeah, the $2 coffee is probably not as good a coffee, but I am not a coffee snob. I just want the caffeine.
Right.
So like, I don't care. I'm just gonna need more of it, you know what I mean? So like,
I'll tell you what, I really want to go to Starbucks right this second.
Well, Sean got home from Scout and I was right away like, go get me a monster, please. Like I'm half asleep. I did not sleep enough between Friday to Sunday, and last night was better, but I'm already so deficit-y from 2 days, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Deficit-y.
Deficit-y.
Yeah, so like, I like that. I think I'm gonna. Yeah,
you should. It's a good word. It's not a real one, but it's a good one.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think it is now.
Yeah.
A word. Yeah. Now it is. Yeah.
But yeah, no. I was so deficit-y. I'm like, no, please, just go get me caffeine, please. Like a coffee was not going to do it, and he got me a monster, and it was amazing. And then I couldn't sleep again last night. So yeah, it took me like. It was like 2 o'clock before I finally got down, and I slept until I messaged you this morning about like, please give me a couple extra hours.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely wasn't like, hey, you ready to go right now?
Yeah. I was just kind
of
planning
my day. Like, as you know, like when I got on here and I started going through my notes of what I have to do for the rest of the day.
Yeah. But no, so we ended up having, both of us forgot we had a vendor coming today.
So
I message with you, that all gets sorted. I roll over to go back to sleep, and my phone makes a noise because at 8 o'clock the do not disturb goes away. Like it turns off automatically.
Oh.
Yeah, I've got it set to a sleep schedule. So every morning at 8 o'clock it quote unquote wakes up, and usually there's an alarm as well.
Welcome to the future.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love this. It's
I didn't
one
know
of my
that
favorite
was something
features.
I could do. Yeah.
Most people don't. And it when I was working for the property management company I was with, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'd text tenants. We had the way the system was set up, like some of the stuff would automatically send out texts, and we didn't know how frequently they were happening or anything. It was just the program. Like we had no control over it.
Yeah.
And one of the programs would text basically like, new job is created. Would you like to schedule the new job? And then like, if I was setting something up in there or something, there was some way that it ended up like texting as soon as you did the thing, an hour later, 6 hours later, and like a day later.
Ooh, that, oh boy. That's a lot.
My understanding, though, is if you responded to any of that, it would stop. Okay. And after the 24 hours later, my understanding was it would stop. And again, I don't remember the specifics. I think it was like, hey, I've picked times, please pick a time kind of thing.
Okay,
yeah. But it's a text and it's an and or an email. You can pick which one as you want as a tenant. And none of our tenants seemed to understand that they could put their phone on do not disturb so that it didn't ring.
Don't expect the customer to understand that.
Oh, and so many of them, they just scream at us. And it's like, turn your phone off. You don't need your phone on in the middle of the night while you're sleeping. You can literally put it on do not disturb or sleep mode. Like, and with Apple phones specifically, because I don't know Android well enough, I've got the iOS, I think it's 17 right now. I can pick how I want my do not disturb. Like, I can have a work do not disturb where certain things can go through that maybe don't go through on my sleep do not disturb and stuff like that. Like, you can actually set it up with it a little bit more sorted out that way. Like, for example, when I've got my sleep one, I have a favorites list of contacts. They can get through my sleep. So my phone can still make noise if, say, you know, my partner messages me or my mother does overnight. But if you messaged me as a text message or tried to call me overnight, it wouldn't go through because you're not on that list, right? And yeah, people just don't seem to understand that there's so much functionality and you can just make your phone shut up. Long story short, finished talking to you. It's after 8 o'clock. I'm rolling over to go back to sleep and I get an email from the new job where they finally sent me my offer and my contract. So I wake up enough to read that and sign it because that's got to get done or I'll forget about it.
Yeah.
And I'm finishing up all that. I'm curling back up to go back to sleep and I get text from Chaos. Hey, window people are going to be here in 20 minutes. It's like, well, I guess I got to get up and clean up the basement now. So yeah, no, I was all like, please, like, we'll meet up a little bit later. I need to sleep. And then just did not get any more sleep.
The first, like, probably real, like, courtroom procedural, although actually the menagerie kind of was too, but this one is way more of a nitty gritty, more down to earth kind of courtroom, like really, you know, calling witnesses, cross examining, like real courtroom drama going on. Mm-hmm. And that has become a thing. Like, there's definitely a lot of Star Trek series have one or two courtroom type episodes, and a lot of them are very good. But the motivations in this one weren't very strong. There was a lot of it honestly was not very grabbing, really. Is if I really had to summarize this whole thing, if someone said, you know, how did you feel about court martial?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it did not grab me, and I feel like a lot of it did not. Like, I don't want to say it didn't come together, but it didn't come together on a thematic character level, which is, you know, important to me.
I feel like part of why, because, like, The Menagerie was, in my opinion, just the better episode of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're going to compare courtroom drama to courtroom drama of the original series.
With what we have so far, yeah.
Yep. I think The Menagerie is a better episode, and I think part of it is I feel like The Menagerie actually had
fun.
Like, not even fun. It's hard to put it into words, but like,
sure.
There's consequences.
Okay, yeah. And the characters' motivations make sense.
Yeah, whereas this one, there's no consequences. I don't feel like anyone's in threat of losing their position within Starfleet. I don't feel like anyone's in danger of anything at all. Like, it's just, it felt like a TV show, whereas The Menagerie felt like it was a retelling of some actual problem that had happened. It didn't feel like it was just a TV show, whatever. It felt like there was consequences. It felt like there was actually drama and stuff was going to be impactful. You know what I mean? Like, it lacked in that a lot, I feel like. And I don't know what about the two episodes made that be the way it was.
Well, I'll tell you what, there are a variety of reasons why we knew Kirk was going to be fine. The bottom line of which being, it's 1966 and we know he's the main character and will be next week.
Yeah, but we had the same thing with the menagerie, too. We knew Spock was going to be around still, because it's 1966. We already know the ending, but it still felt more weighted to me.
Yeah, maybe because it also is the ending for Pike, is really what is the unknown, kind of.
Maybe.
And this is kind of, you know, and it's also set up as in, like, you know, there was a computer problem, and they even say it's going to be you versus the computer, and we kind of know that, like, if the computer is, and we'll get to how funny that terminal looked where he pressed the eject fitty button, but we know that if it's Kirk versus the computer made a mistake. Like, we just, you know, we know that Kirk is not, basically, we know what they had three people get up and provide testimony of, which is Kirk is not that kind of man. He's not going to be hateful and vengeful and eject a man. And we just know. We know the computer's going to be wrong even before we hear all of that, because we know that about Kirk.
And that might be what it is. Like, they're trying to do a smear campaign almost against a guy who, at this point, he's well established to us. Whereas Spock, in episode 11, is a lot less established and a lot less unknown entity. Like, he's even now still a much more hidden entity because of the, you know, I've got to be logical and straightforward and
it's that Vulcanian.
What's under the surface, whereas with Kirk it's like, no, he's a fucking open book, there's no question there, pardon the language, but like, there's no question of what's going on under his thinking with his glands and he's thinking with his fists. Let's go.
Spock is exactly the kind of guy that might make some weird logical computer robot decision to fucking eject the dude before the problem even begins.
Yeah. And
Spock shit. That's some Spock shit.
Yeah, and that's probably what it is on overall, is that Spock is more in line with what we, under modern sensibilities, might consider to be a potential supervillain or, you know, a turncoat, you know, a betrayer, whereas Kirk is very clearly not going to do that ever. He is very clearly the hero. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe that's what it is. I just know that that's where I think I landed on it, is it's this one here was a lot less of compelling because there's no consequence. It's like watching the prequel movies for Star Wars. If you've seen 4 through 6 and then you watched 1 through 3, there's no consequence. I'm not worried about anything. Like, no matter what you do, you can throw Anakin in anything, and I'm like, yeah, he's going to be fine. Who cares?
We know, like, that the Republic's going to collapse, and we know the Empire is coming, and
yeah.
We know Palpatine's going to be in charge. No big surprise there, so.
Yeah, whereas with 7... obviously. Oh, no worries. Whereas with 7 through 9, there's more worry because we don't know Rey, we don't know Kylo Ren, we don't know what's going to happen to them, and yeah, it's Star Wars, so you back of brain, you know the Republic's going to win eventually, and like, it's going to be yay for everyone, it's going to be good guys, but you still don't know what's actually going to happen to the characters, you don't know that if they're going to make it to the next movie.
We did not know that somehow Palpatine would return.
Honestly, I was kind of surprised that they bothered bringing him back in, God, like, movie 9. I'm not going to lie.
Very silly time.
It was still fun, though. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I went to a movie theater to see The Rise of Skywalker twice. And it was the last movie. The last movie I ever saw in a theater was the second time I saw Rise of Skywalker.
Really?
Yeah, that was it. I mean, and then 2020 happened, and I said, well, I'm definitely not going to go anywhere ever again.
I don't think we made it for Rise of Skywalker. I know we saw Force Awakens in theaters. I don't remember if we saw Last Jedi in theaters. I know we've seen it in general, but I don't think we saw it in theaters. I think of the Star Wars movies, Force Awakens is the last one we saw in theaters. Last movie we saw in theaters was The Spider-Verse Part 2 last year.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We went because it was our anniversary, and we're like, if we had COVID, we've already had it this year. Who cares?
That's a good movie that you risk getting COVID over.
It was an empty theater, too, because cool. We went, like, we timed it so that it was like a weekday and it was early enough in the day that the kids would still be in, like, unavailable in all likelihood, but late enough in the day that, like, the parents wouldn't be pushing to get their kids in someplace cold and outside of, like, away from the outside.
Sure.
Like, go do things outside, go away kind of a time for all the littles, so we didn't have to worry about a lot of kids. And we did it before dinner, so we had, our movie was at, like, 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we just went for dinner afterwards, so we, like, skipped, because we got to dinner as all the people who were going to go see movies were leaving dinner to go to the movies. So we timed it on purpose, because, like, no, please, no children. It was our anniversary. We didn't want to deal with it.
So let's go right into spoiler territory. What did you think about Willem Dafoe's performance in this episode?
You know, young Willem Dafoe, it's not something you see very often. He really sold it. No, but seriously, that guy looked like very Green Goblin-y, like
give it real gear. Yeah, he looked more like the Green Goblin than like Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
It's just,
no, they really hardcored that. It was very, very
Willem very Dafoe just happens to be a perfect Green Goblin.
I could not have asked for a better one. He was amazing. We're not getting into Spider-Man though. We're talking about Star Trek.
I mean, especially in No Way Home. The final performance as that Green Goblin is incredible.
That movie was so well done.
It's long. I don't think, yeah. Is it 3 hours? I can't give any movie over 2.5 hours, like, too much praise.
I don't remember how long it is. And there's also an extended version out now.
Oh, I bet it's 4.5 hours long.
I don't remember. So, No Way Home itself is 2.5?
Too long. Just barely. It almost made it. 2:29 is the longest I'll sit for a movie.
So, No Way Home is 2:28. No Way Home extended version is 2:36.
Well, it's got to be the original cut.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. It was well done, and he's Willem Dafoe specifically is one of those guys who, when he's in any movie, he is the best part of the movie. Like, he it could be the shittiest thing out there, and he will rock it. And, I mean, there's a few actors who are like that for me, and he's always been one of them, where it's like, I will watch anything with him in it. The movie can be utter trash, and he will be just phenomenal.
Did you see Poor Things?
I don't know if he's in Poor Things. No. I haven't seen Poor Things yet.
No, the question was, did you see it?
I have not.
Yeah.
I have not seen it yet. I've heard a little bit about it. I don't know if I'll get to it anytime soon, though, to be honest. It doesn't sound like it's going to be my gig.
It's really, really good. I have a huge list of things that I want to, like, stream on Discord and or podcast about, but that probably should be on that list, because it's, like, and I'm really interested in that director right now, so, but it's, like, it's gorgeous. It's just insane how good it looks and how good the costumes are.
If you want pretty with him in it, I just push anyone towards Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, I recall not being grabbed.
Oh, I loved that movie.
Yeah?
I'm a fan of Wes Anderson in general, though. So, like, if you don't like the director and his style, I can see where it wouldn't hold. You know what I mean?
I feel like I liked it the first three times, that style. And then it just didn't change. And I feel like we may have had this conversation.
I don't know if we've had it about him. I know we've talked about Quentin Tarantino like that. Similar, for the same reason.
Same kind of thing. Like, I said something about Quentin Tarantino movies almost being like pastiches of Quentin Tarantino movies. And Wes Anderson?
Yeah, Wes Anderson did, it's one he did. Fantastic Mr. Fox, Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, Grand Budapest Hotel. He's done a bunch.
Yeah.
He's got a, like, very distinctive style.
Very distinctive, and a lot of it. And honestly, yeah. And honestly, I guess, yeah. Kind of hit or miss. Moonrise Kingdom's incredible. I was very high and feel like I need to watch the Alien movie again, because something very strange and Gynax-y happens in the end of it.
Yeah, and I was
dumbfounded. You know, Asteroid City, it's his most recent movie.
Film. Yeah, I've been wanting to watch it. It looks really good.
It honestly maybe should even be on my list, because it's a lot.
it's one of those things where it's about a play, but it's also about the actual events that the play is based on are unfolding while a plot line about someone making a play about it is also happening. And it comes together in a very strange scene, which I guess I'm going to watch it the whole thing again, and maybe it even needs to be on my list of things to talk about. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that particular... There's at least three Andersons in filmmaking.
Wes Anderson's the one that really always comes to mind for me. I can't place...
Well, there's the Resident Evil guy, but there's also... Inherent Vice, Magnolia, The Master. Those are movies by Anne Anderson. Paul Thomas? Paul Thomas is those other movies I said.
Okay.
And then Wes.
Wes funny. Is the one I know.
It's funny because it's Paul W.S., which is kind of like Wes. And then the other one is Paul Thomas. There's it's a connection. All the same guy. There's a. It is all. I think it is. I think the guy that made Resident Evil and fucking Mortal Kombat also directed Magnolia and the Grand Budapest Hotel. Probably, they probably are the same guy. Like some kind of Bruce Keaton. I mean Bruce Wayne, Bruce Keaton, Michael Keaton. Bruce Wayne.
Okay, yeah.
Michael Keaton and Bruce Wayne have never been photographed together. Do you know that?
Yes.
Okay. So, do you have anything to add about Wes Anderson before we move?
No, not about Wes Anderson. I was going to say I've watched another Quentin Tarantino movie recently.
Oh.
And I've tripled down on my, no, I'm really not a fan of his.
After The Hateful Eight?
Yeah, because, again, the Walton Goggins kick, he was in Django Unchained, and I've been wanting to see Django Unchained since it came out. So
yeah.
I gave it a go, and that's just...
Goddamn.
Not a good movie.
It's just... I don't even know what it's trying to do.
It was basically, on Saturday, when I was spinning bobbins while Chaos wasn't home, like, I just sat down and put that on before I watched Avatar and Avatar 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it was a whole day of sitting on the couch with, like, a heating pad on my back and just spinning bobbins. It was great. Django Unchained was boring. Like, I didn't care about any of the characters at all the entire time. It was a boring movie. And even the gratuitous violence stuff was just kind of, Yeah, we've seen this.
Yeah, it was kind of like, okay, obviously. And every time that movie tries to be over the top, I was just like, yeah, we know. Okay, yeah, these are bad guys. This is complete, like, it's just so, like, over the top with violence and cruelty and exploding body parts. And which is like, I mean, you've heard me say that those are all great things to see on television, but that movie didn't come together. In a big way for me.
No, yeah, it didn't. It was just, and like...
The characters are unlikable.
For the most part, actually, yeah. Like
just, yeah, they're either unlikable or just wholly evil. Unbelievably evil. Like beyond the realm of a reasonable story. Evil.
The only character I liked was Christoph Waltz.
Yeah, and even he's a fucking idiot most of the time. And especially... During the very disappointing climax of the movie, Christoph Waltz's character is a dumbass.
Yeah, no, he was literally the only character I cared about in the entire movie. It was dumb. It was just not a good movie. And, like, so I was texting a friend of mine during it, specifically at the scene when Django is been given over to go to, the mines, and he's got, like, the Australian bounty hunters, and it's Quentin Tarantino himself. And he's doing such a shitty accent. And I'm just like, please, please stop self-inserting yourself. Like, Hitchcock did it. But Hitchcock usually had it as, like, a shadow or something small. And he just keeps putting himself as an actual actor in his movies and having lines and trying to have an impact on the film. And it's like, you are such a pretentious little shit. And not good enough an actor to do what you're doing. Stop. Like, please stop. But that's just me not liking Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I really, and I, yeah, I barely even paid attention to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I really just, and again, and it's even way more, I'll tell you, at least Wes Anderson, I went back and forth during, like, the second half of his career. Like, every other movie, I feel like, is good, and some of them are not interesting. And Tarantino, after 2001 or whatever, after, let's just say everything in 2000. I didn't even like Kill Bill. I wouldn't say Kill Bill is
particularly... I liked Kill Bill.
I think it's fine, but I really didn't like all of his movies after the year 2000.
You know, I liked Kill Bill 1 and 2 both. Well, 1 was better than 2, but like I liked them both just fine. And then Inglourious Basterds, I didn't mind. But after that, like, that's about the end of it. You know what I mean? Like, that's when he started really getting up his own ass too much.
I'm 50-50 on Inglourious Basterds. Probably, I probably like it less just because I don't like any of its contemporaries.
And that's fair.
I feel, but it's starting to get to be, the formula was just so on display at that point. I was kind of like, okay, Tarantino.
Yeah, no, I fully am behind you on that one. Yeah. I didn't mind it as much. I liked, I mean, part of that's also, he has good actors who are able to carry his shitty films. And it felt like Inglourious Basterds, well, first of all, it's the first time I ever ran into Christoph Waltz, and I actually really like his work.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
And him throughout the whole film, he's up there with, he's increasingly getting up there with, for me, like, as Willem Dafoe, where it doesn't matter what he's in, he carries the movie. And that's what he did. Like, his character carried a lot of Inglourious Basterds for me. Like, he did a lot of legwork that nobody else was able to do. But yeah, after that, like, just downhill really fast. I never saw Grindhouse or Death Proof, like, is very clearly exploitation films. Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, and nothing until, like, more recently. And it's just, again, not been great more recently.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. As I'm looking at his director history, too, by the way, it looks like that's most of his more recent films is what we've already covered. Like, he hasn't done much in the 2000s.
No, not a ton, which is actually something I like. I like it if when a director makes a movie every couple of years and doesn't, you know, churn stuff out, like, you know.
Usually a sign that they're putting an effort into their films.
I'm sure Quentin Tarantino puts an intense amount of effort into his films.
Oh, I'm not saying he doesn't. I'm just saying.
Oh, no, like, no, that, yeah. That, no one is saying he doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah, that's usually a good sign that he is putting a lot of work into his films. Like, it's usually a good sign when they do the couple of years. They're either taking some time for themselves and to have, you know, a healthy work-life balance, or they're really putting that effort in to make sure that the quality of the work is where they want it to be. And whether or not it's your gig, you know, at least they're making that effort, right?
I'm a really annoying audience in that I always want to see something different than whatever you showed me last time. So that's not what Tarantino and Wes Anderson are doing. They're doing stuff that they know works. It just doesn't work on me.
I feel like, in general, I don't need it to always be new. I don't mind similar. I feel like Wes Anderson's style is just more, like, the stories he's telling are more compelling to me.
Yeah.
Whereas Quentin Tarantino, he's just trying to do the exploitation films of the 70s. And again, I've said it a few times, I feel like what he's putting out is just really pretentious. He's got his head up his own ass, and I'm tired of that. Whereas I'm sure Wes Anderson is also really pretentious and has his head up his own ass as well. I'm not pretending he doesn't, but at least his stories are something I enjoy, whereas I don't enjoy the stories that Tarantino's telling. Yeah. Anyways, that is completely unrelated to Star Trek. We've gone on one heck of a tangent, and my apologies on that.
Yeah, so Kirk jettisoned... So, when the computer... And we're not even... This isn't even where we're at
in the play-by-play. But when they do look, we talked about how there is a computer log which is in error. And I don't, did we mention, or did I think this was before I started recording, when the credits were rolling, we talked about the fact that the records have been tampered with, because which we know for a fact, because Spock has beaten the computer at chess. There's no way Spock can beat the computer at chess, because the chess program is based on Spock's abilities. So as a result, we know that the computer is tampered with. So spoiler alert, the Green Goblin, the person that Kirk is on trial for murdering, is alive and hidden in the ship, in the engineering room, which is empty. He's hidden there. We know it because of chess, Spock playing chess. But what I wanted to say was, when we see the doctored tape of what happened on the bridge, the control panel. So if you ever wondered what's on that control panel on Kirk's right hand, he's got three buttons: red alert, yellow alert, and jettison pod. So what he's being accused of is hitting yellow alert, and then before there's even an emergency going on, he hits the jettison pod button and kills Ben Finney, which, like, I'm not sure what the pod is we're talking about, but does Kirk just have a button that kills whoever's in the pod by jettisoning it?
I think the implication is less him killing the guy who's in the pod, but by jettisoning the pod out into space where it's not going to get picked up or anything, like, he dies because of just exposure. Like, that's how I understood it.
Okay. Weird that it's a button that Kirk just, one of the three buttons that Kirk has at his right hand.
Oh, I agree. But
you're right. We're not even really given a clear idea of what actually the accident was.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is partially because they're doing the sort of reveal through the courtroom drama intrigue kind of thing. But, like, by the end of the episode, we don't know what the accident was, really. Other than involved three very strange buttons. I would understand if he had, well, I mean, you know, these days he's probably got some little screen there that he touches on a touch screen. But the fact that he has a red alert button right at his right hand, sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yellow alert should totally be there.
Yeah, maybe if you need to have two different alert buttons there, yeah. But jettison whatever pod.
No, it's just a weird choice. But it's clearly... it's clearly like one of those, again, they're doing this based off of stage plays, right? So, like, this is a prop, you need this prop, let's do it for this story, it's fine to put there.
Yeah, this one, all it is that this one struck me as particularly funny.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I know that I said a lot of things leading up to that, and I don't know if I really spit out the entire plot line, but it does have a lot to do with chess.
The chess was to prove that the computer was fallible. So, like, the main thing that was sticking it in to stop Kirk from being able to get away with killing the guy was that the computer was insisting that he sent the ship out, like, he jettisoned it before they'd gone to whatever alert, be it yellow or red, I can't remember exactly. And so Kirk's insisting that, no, I was at the right level of alert and then kicked the guy out of the ship. Yeah. And Spock's like, we have to prove that the ship's computer is fallible, because there's no way Kirk could be fallible.
It's weird that little detail makes so much of a difference. Like, just by the whether or not you kill the guy, regulation says that you have to go to red alert before killing him. And not to mention that it ends up being, as we've mentioned, he's not even killed. The whole thing, the reason he changed the computer records of the ship or the bridge or whatever is because he was faking his own death so that he could then kill everyone else later on. I guess we assume he's faking his... During... when we spoke immediately after the episode, we weren't sure exactly So what the timeline was, and here is my timeline. My timeline now is that he faked his own death doing that whole court-martial thing to obviously get Kirk in trouble, but his plan was to hide out until they got to a space dock or something and he could sneak away and be free of his life and Starfleet, I guess. But then when he realizes he's been found, oh yeah, by the way, they do a very strange scene where a bunch of people are on the I guess there's, you know, it's a tense kind of scene. It's a dramatic scene. A bunch of people are on the bridge of the Enterprise and they know that bro is there. So they use some white noise device. They use a specific term for it, but Dr. McCoy, they're listening to everything that the ship can hear. So when everyone's silent, they hear a bunch of heartbeats. But Dr. McCoy uses some sonic device to remove their heartbeats from the overall, to mix it in with the white noise or whatever, so that they can hear one man's heartbeat on the bridge. So at that point is when he sabotages the ship so that the orbit will decay, because he's going to kill Kirk and everyone and himself. This guy has succumbed to space madness. Did I just do a terrible job?
No, I think that's actually the best explanation we're going to get of the episode. Like, it's such a weird little episode, and just, like, they skip out on explaining things. That's really what it is. They just skip out on explaining things or making things make sense. They're just like, no, people will figure it. It's fine. For and it's me, like, it's... please, no, please actually explain this, because, like, it's not fine.
Yeah, for me, why it doesn't make sense is because none of the motivations are clear of any of those.
Yeah.
Anything that I like, especially Benjamin Finney, who other than he's just space mad with a bloodlust for Kirk.
Well, and like you have even said it too, where it's like the things aren't clear and they kind of just pushed for a bunch of reveals all at once. So you're getting reveal, 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 reveal. And as has been mentioned in the past, this show likes to do all of their reveals and now we're done.
Yeah.
Like, there's no denouement.
Yeah.
It's just, here's the answer. Here's what happened. Moving on. And there's no actual like space for that. It's almost like they take it all up and getting to that point, and then they just rush through the ending and then we're done. Move on. Nope. Don't look at it. It's cool. And I feel like this episode in particular really suffers from that.
The denouement of this episode is Kirk making out with the prosecution, his old girlfriend, which was also going on, which is another plot line. There's a lot here. There was a lot here in this episode.
There is. And I think this is one of those episodes that if it had been put out nowadays, I think it would have been better off, just because they would have been able to give it two episodes.
Sure.
And I think this is one that needs two episodes. It needs one for everything leading up to the denouement, and then cliffhanger, do they survive? Do they win? And then they go through the reveal, 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 and give it that space that it needs to make it make sense in the second episode. I think that's what this one needs, honestly, the more I'm trying to, like...
I like that. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
And because it wasn't common to do that back then, they couldn't, and I get that, but, like, it really suffers from rush-through syndrome. It has, they're trying to do too much in too short a time, I feel like.
I like the part in this episode where Kirk meets his defense lawyer, and his defense lawyer is in a room full of books, and he's going, computers are full of shit. The computer's definitely wrong. No one should listen to computers everywhere. Look at my piles and piles of dusty books. I have no idea how to access any of the information, but I got a pile of books. Fuck computers. And it sounds like I'm making fun of his point of view, but he's correct. Piles of books are better.
I agree. But no, I think the best part of the entire episode is when, like, right at the beginning, when McCoy's like, hi, I'm Leonard McCoy. Who are you? And she's like, I'm a friend of Kirk's. And he's like, oh, man, all of my friends look like old doctors, and all of his friends look like, well, you. It's like, dude, put your glands away.
McCoy and his goddamn glands all the time. Glands on display.
He is so horny. I did not remember him being this horny. Overflowing
with glands in this original series. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's my favorite part. Just, again, the tripling down on on the glands of McCoy and them being hyperactive. I love that.
I will give a 6 to court martial.
You know what? I was thinking about the same, so I will also give it a 6. I wasn't sure if I was going to go 6 or 6.5.
Yeah.
I think 6 is a good one, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, there's definitely this, it was missing something. Something didn't, it just didn't quite click. And maybe it is because there just was a lot going on. I agree with you about how it could have been a two-parter, really. A lot of this could have been looked into more. Like a lot of each of those little threads, yeah.
Yeah, I think if they had given themselves a little bit more time to actually examine it, it would have done better for it overall. I really do.
All right, so let's see here. The question of the week for this one was, what is your favorite courtroom episode of any show? Or just your favorite courtroom show overall? Favorite courtroom media, what you got? Locke says, obviously Night Court is a classic. Yeah. Who was that guy? That main character from Night Court was in something that I really like, I think. But, I mean, I don't know if I have to mention this, but Brent Spiner was in a few episodes of Night Court. Pretty sure. So there you go. There's your Star Trek connection. Anyway, Locke says, but my favorite courtroom show is the entirety of TNG, thanks to Q. That's right. You know that. The trial never ends. Atheist Man says the Billy and Mandy court episodes. I haven't seen a lot of Billy and Mandy, but I saw a few that were very cool. Saint says the Futurama episode where they make fun of the menagerie, the go beep yourself. Yeah, please answer using the beeps. Yes. Grav says the courtroom scene from My Cousin Vinny is an all-time great, and it is, and we're going to hear more about that in a second. He says that he's not seen Better Call Saul. Oh, wait. I haven't seen the show, but I know Better Call Saul has some good ones. It probably does. I kind of feel like maybe I should rewatch Better Call Saul. The court's Haunted Sleep says the court scenes from Clerks the cartoon with Judge Reinhold were too much, and she's right. There is a scene in that episode where Randall is calling various Hollywood directors to the stand, a little bit like what me and Chris were just doing, but Randall as a lawyer is calling Hollywood directors to the stand, explaining to them how bad their movies are and demanding his money back from going to see them. He gets George Lucas up there and he starts telling George Lucas that Star Wars is bad. And George Lucas says, I don't know if anyone in the world found this as funny as me, but George Lucas starts saying something like, well, you see the power of myth. And, you know, Randall cuts him off or something, but it's very like that whole, the whole thing about George Lucas talking about cycles of myth, even, and anyway, I don't know. I did a bad job. That's a very funny episode, the Clerks courtroom one. Cop Rock, the movie. I almost feel like I remember Cop Rock. This is Surreptitious Music's answer is Cop Rock, the movie. There was a TV show, and I guess a movie. Yeah, Weeb says the My Cousin Vinny bit where Marissa Tomei provides expert testimony on Positrack limited slip differentials and independent suspension in her sassy New York accent. Yeah, great scene. Yes. And those are the answers to that one. The question of the week this week. Next week we're doing Return of the Archons, and the question is going to be, if it was Purge night, and assuming that you are not in the basement surrounded by shotguns, what's the first thing you're going to do? All right. See you next week on the Least Ready Room for Revenge of the Archons. Peace. Thank you.